From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 12th day of March, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, there are calls for the voluntary animal ID program to be overhauled, scrapped, or to become mandatory. The EU is set to tax biodiesel imported from the United States. And the lawmakers in Washington want countries in Latin America to amend their labor laws before a free trade agreement is signed. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt about the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Mark Report is a production of WILL. It's public radio from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Thursday afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit, March contract, soft red, 515 and a quarter, up 16 and a half. May contract at 525, up 16 and three quarters. In July, $5.37 and a quarter, 17 cents higher. The lead option, hard red in Kansas City, March contract at 574 on the settlement, up 16 and a half cents. March corn back in Chicago, $3.76 and three quarters a bushel, up 20 and three quarters. May at 385 and a quarter, 20 and three quarters higher. In July, $3.95 and a half, up 21. September futures, $4.04, up 20 and a quarter. December contract, 415 and three quarters, up 19 and three quarters. March soybean futures, $8.99, up 24. The May up 20 at 882. July, 881 and a half, up 20 and three quarters. And August soybeans, 871, 21 and a half higher. November beans, 841 and a half, up 24 and one half. March bean meal futures, 289, up 770. May at 276.50, up $7. March oil at 3011, up 47. May bean oil, 3038, up 47 as well. April live cattle, $83.90, up $1.35 for 100 weight. And the March feeder cattle at $90.90, up 90 cents for the day. April lean hog futures now stand at 62.22 and a half. They're at $1.90 higher. Lee, you're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. It is a production of Public Radio. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $47.03 a barrel. A gain of $4.70 today. In the April contract, the May at $47.97, up $3.98. April ethanol at $1.55, 2 4/10 higher. The May at $1.57, up 4 1/10. Natural gas at $3.99 5/10, up 19 7/10. May natural gas at $4.05 9/10, up 20 cents. And the RBOB gasoline at $1.33 7/10, 8 6/10 higher for the day. In the April contract, heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.22 even, up 8 7/10 for the April. And the propane April contract at 60 3/10 cents, down 1 4/10 cents. Gold futures at $923.70, up $13.30 on the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average back above 7,000 at 71.37. Now trading 206.7 points higher for the day. The U.S. dollar at 87.66 is up 0.02 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like as put together by our own Mike Sulla. He says skies tonight should be mostly clear in the far north, mostly cloudy in the south. Lows will range from around 10 in northeastern Indiana to 28 in the far south. And then tomorrow it'll be partly to mostly sunny with highs ranging across the two-state area from 35 in northern Indiana to 50 in the far south. The extended forecast calls for colder air to shift to the east and near-seasonal temperatures will come in and rule the region this weekend. The remainder of the next 10 days to 2 weeks, we'll see temps range from slightly above average to average. Precip will be limited into the weekend. A few snow showers will linger into southern Indiana early on Friday. We'll be back in just a moment when we'll talk with Dan Zwicker.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. The 2009 All-Day Agricultural Outlook Meeting is in the books. The second largest crowd in the event's 19-year history helped make this year's event a success. Watch our website at WILLAG.org for audio from the meeting. Our thanks to these agribusinesses who supported this year's event: ADM, Cargill, Bates Commodities, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Cadent EFG Risk Management Commodities.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, is with us. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, I hear you're headed to Charleston along with a couple of other folks and the director of ag programming here at this radio station, our home station, Dave Dickey, tonight for another Ag Outlook meeting. Is that right?
Yes. It's one of the rare ones that I've done. I don't think I've done too many Ag Outlooks for WIL this winter, so I'm going to kind of wrap up the season here with one tonight, and I think I'm on tap, I think, for next Thursday up in Mazan, Illinois.
All right. Well, hopefully, and we'll have more information on that meeting a bit later in the program, but hopefully you'll have a good meeting tonight. What are you going to be able to tell them about the prices today?
Well, I think you have to say that game's on. Today's action in corn went ahead and validated the uptick that we had there on Thursday over the beef house, or Tuesday on the beef house. We did exceed the previous week's high or previous rally high on a closed basis now, and we were even able to take out Tuesday's high. So I do think from a technical perspective, the corn market has shifted to something more in a sideways to higher type range than what we had been in basically since early January when we turned down. We kept making lower lows and lower highs. Now it looks like at least we have the start of a higher high, which is supportive to the overall chart pattern as we finish up or we hit the growing season.
Now, yesterday, the marketplace tried but ended up ignoring the USDA ending stocks reports. They were relatively friendly, both certainly to the soybean and to the corn market. Is that what the fundamental move is behind today's operation, or was there something else afoot?
Well, yesterday we saw some index fund liquidation. There's still people wanting to make redemptions. People are still wanting cash out of the marketplace, whether it's commodities and or stocks or whatever. So we did see some of that liquidation. Today was just kind of one of those good days. There was just all good news all around for the commodity market to rally on. We kind of started off with better than expected weekly export sales across the board from corn to wheat. The equity market has put in a good day here today. So when you look at the outside market activities, they were all generally supportive of the commodity markets. The dollar has been somewhat on the defensive here over the past 2 to 3 days. Today it's kind of steadied out, but it is still looking like we're going to close out the week lower on the dollar, and that would be first time in some time. So we've just kind of got a general positive attitude. I think a lot of speculation in FOMA economics is going to come out tomorrow at 10:30, I think, with their acreage estimates. And of course, they've been using an 82, 83 million acre estimate on corn and a fairly high one on soybeans. So I think the market focus is on a lower corn acre or prospects that we could see a sharp fall off in corn acres due to input costs and weather pattern. At least we're starting out kind of cold and damp here for the last part of March. So that's, I think, was the catalyst behind basically the corn market. Wheat market is getting some traction from basically the opposite warm and dry forecast in the southern plains.
Tell me about the tech picture as I take a look at the December harvest month for corn. 10 and 20 days are at the bottom end of today's trading range, so it finished above that. And the very top end, I think, is at the 50-day trading
range. Yeah, we're right up against it. The May futures did close above their 50-day moving average, but December here is right, a tick or two underneath it. If we could see some decent follow-through here to finish out the week and kind of close above this 50-day, it does open the gates up to maybe go visit the upper end of this downtrending channel that we've been in basically since November, early January, which would be, on these futures up into this 440, 450 area. Just underneath the early January high there, about 471.
And if you were to make it that high, would you advise producers to go ahead and make a sale?
Well, I think they have to take advantage of an early spring rally. We don't know necessarily what the summer is going to be and what the fall and the rest of the economy, but I'm big on buying puts with a cash contract. That kind of protects the downside, especially if we got December futures on up into that 440, 450 area. Farmers could start locking in near a $4 cash bid, put a put on it. So if the market did decide to go on up another 50 cents for one reason or the other, that they'd have the opportunity to take advantage of it. So, that's what I'm kind of advocating is purchase puts against a basis contract, or you could do a bushels only with the local grain elevator and still be in position to take advantage of higher prices.
So lock in your basis, purchase a put, and in the money put?
Pretty close into the money. You could maybe sell a call or so out of the money to kind of give you a little a window there to take advantage of higher prices. But I would look at something close to the money or a little bit out of the money.
All right. So just so that we're clear, if you sell a call, that's more of a futures position and you're on the line.
That would be
more
of a synthetic futures, because basically what you're wanting is the market to go down at that point. So the call goes down in value to zero and your put increases in value as the market goes down. So that, but if you do one out of the money on corn, let's say a buck and a half or so out of the money, then that gives you an opportunity to maybe capture another $1.50 up in the market, but once you go above that short strike price, you're done. You're not going to gain on any strength beyond that short strike level.
How about the soybean market? What do you see for it?
Soybean market similar, not quite as positive on the chart action,
right.
But we are looking like the bean market might want to try to do a little recovery of this break that we saw here during February. You look at your major moving averages, they're all going to be up there in this $9 area. So, farmers could probably look at something in this $8.80 to $9 area if they were looking at a place to maybe be a little defensive on soybeans. We don't know what spring planting is going to be, but like we mentioned there at the beef house, the window's open anyway for a fairly decent a big increase in soybean plantings, but that'll have a lot to say with spring weather and what corn market does.
Okay. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
That's about all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very well.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. Join us this evening for another one of our free AM 580 Agricultural Outlook panels. Tonight we'll be at the Salisbury Church in Charleston, Illinois, with a dinner at 5:30 p.m. and a panel at 6:15. Panelists for the meeting include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. That's at the Salisbury Church in Charleston, Illinois, this evening. The panel getting underway at 6:15. No advance registration is required, and the panel is free.
Make sure you visit with Dave tonight if you're in the area at Charleston at the Salisbury Church in Charleston. And you can also find all that information on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Speaking of Dave, he'll be back in just a moment. He'll help us take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural news for the afternoon. And one other note about our Will Ag website. We'll be posting most, probably all, in fact, of our ag programming for the all-day ag outlook that took place over the Beef House on Tuesday there. That'll happen today or tomorrow yet. Here with the Ag News.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says the current voluntary animal ID program is ineffective. Deputy Administrator for Veterinary Services John Clifford says, quote, unless we can provide adequate incentives for the idea of a voluntary system, it's got to be mandatory. The European Union on Friday will place steep duties on biodiesel imported from the U.S. to offset a subsidy the U.S. government gives to its biodiesel producers. The 27-member bloc will impose two kinds of duties, one to counter the government subsidy and one for dumping the product at unfairly low prices onto the EU market. The subsidies will last 4 months while the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, determines if multi-year duties are necessary. A key lawmaker says Panama, Colombia, and South Korea need to resolve a number of outstanding concerns before Congress will approve free trade pacts with each of those countries. Representative Sander Levin is chair of the House of Representatives Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee, which plays a key role in congressional consideration of trade deals. Levin says that he is planning to take a fact-finding trip to both Panama and Colombia before leading a broader congressional delegation to both countries later this year. Levin says that Panama needs to adopt a number of labor law reforms, and Colombia also must amend its labor laws to comply with International Labor Organization standards. Levin says the South Korean agreement contains one-sided automotive and manufacturing provisions that must be changed. China is complaining about a U.S. law blocking imports of Chinese poultry products at a World Trade Organization meeting yesterday. The move falls short of launching a formal trade dispute that Beijing had threatened, but reflects China's continuing unease about the ban. In a note to the U.S. diplomatic mission to the WTO, China said it was raising serious representations about the issue. The note said Chinese lawmakers are calling on Beijing to retaliate by blocking imports of U.S. poultry products. In the Omnibus Appropriations Act of 2009, a spending bill approved by the U.S. Senate on Tuesday, Congress banned U.S. food safety inspectors from letting in poultry products from China. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can listen to this program, other agricultural programming, all directly from the website if you'd like. Or if you'd like to have it downloaded to your computer automatically, sign up to have it delivered as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. You can also sign up for our weekend newsletter. Hit subscribe there. And you can listen to the All-Day Agricultural Outlook from earlier in the week. It's there as well. All right there at willag.org. So if you were at that Ag Outlook meeting over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, you can hear it again on our website. Or if you weren't, you can hear it for the very first time. Should be posted today or tomorrow at willag.org. Up next in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says if you own a private well, it's your responsibility to help protect the nation's water supply.
The National Groundwater Association is encouraging owners of household water well systems to take some simple steps to minimize risks to their water supply during National Groundwater Awareness Week, March 8th through the 14th. The National Groundwater Association recommends owners of household water well systems consider the following steps. First, proper well location and construction. Work with a qualified professional, a water well system contractor, or hydrogeologist to determine the best location for a well. When having a well built, use a qualified water well system contractor who should be familiar with state or local well construction codes, including those pertaining to separation distances from potential contamination sources. Second, regular well system maintenance. Get an annual well system maintenance checkup to reduce risks to your water supply and prevent costly and inconvenient breakdowns. Third, water testing and treatment. A dirty well can create an environment suitable to bacterial growth and impair effective disinfection. A qualified water well system contractor can determine if your water well system needs cleaning. And finally, groundwater protection. Locate any abandoned wells on your property and contact a qualified water well system contractor to determine whether the abandoned well has been properly decommissioned. An improperly abandoned well can be a direct path for contamination into an aquifer. Never dispose of any substance down an abandoned well. If the abandoned well has not been properly sealed, always use a qualified water well system contractor to seal it. This requires special techniques, equipment, and materials. All of these steps are important to ensure a continued supply of safe groundwater. The National Groundwater Association encourages people to learn more and find ideas for promoting groundwater awareness at www.wellowner.org. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. And just one more time, the website Amy mentioned is www.wellowner.org.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. The 2009 All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is in the books. The second largest crowd in the event's 19-year history helped make this year's event a success. Watch our website at willag.org for audio from the meeting. Our thanks to these agribusinesses who supported this year's event: ADM, Cargill, Bates Commodities, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Cadent EFG Risk Management Commodities.
In about 2 minutes, I'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather forecast. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon.
This look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The mayor of Pontiac says he's going to do a happy dance down Main Street now that the state of Illinois has decided to keep the Pontiac Correctional Center open. Scott McCoy says Governor Pat Quinn apparently left politics aside in deciding today to scrap former Governor Ralph Blagojevich's plan to close Pontiac in favor of a little-used prison in Thompson. Quinn's office says keeping Pontiac employees in place would be the most economically sound move. The prison is one of the area's largest employers. The Illinois Department of Corrections says about 500 people work there now.
State prison officials have asked an Indiana Senate panel for more money, in part to expand two prisons. Department of Correction officials told the Senate Appropriations Committee today it needs $40 million in bonding authority to expand the maximum security prisons near Peru and Sullivan, Indiana. They say prison cells for violent offenders are over capacity now, and they expect hundreds of new inmates to be sent to the agency's custodies over the next couple of years. University of Illinois trustees have agreed to pay $9 million to the family of an Indiana woman who died at one of its hospitals last year. The family of 39-year-old Michelle Balog says University of Illinois Medical Center staff in Chicago didn't respond properly when Balog went into respiratory arrest during liver surgery. It'll be at least May before students at the U of I know how much their tuition will be next year. But Chief Financial Officer Walter Norris says administrators will get a much clearer picture of the university's funding prospects next week with Governor Quinn's budget address to state lawmakers. Still, Norris says the U of I's goal is to set tuition at the May Board of Trustees meeting, and a state budget may not be finalized by then. The tallest building in America is getting a new name. Chicago Sears Tower will be renamed Willis Tower after London-based Willis Group Holdings. The insurance broker announced the name change today, as well as other details of its agreement with the building's owners. Willis is moving 5 local offices and nearly 500 employees into the 110-story building. The move is expected to be complete by late summer. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt joins us, meteorologist from Massachusetts, to talk about the agricultural weather. Hi, Pete. How are you today?
I'm fine, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm very, very good. You know, it's kind of sunshiny. I was out during the noon hour today. Not too bad here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. A little cool still, but I think it'll get warmer as time passes. In fact, I'm sure that'll be the case.
Well, yes. I mean, spring is inevitable. That's the only aspect of global warming I'll ascribe to at the present time. We are starting off cold. We've just completed a cold week, and all that wet weather that went by across the northern half of the state is over. We're happy to say that, and we're looking forward to a week of practically no precipitation at all. So that'll be nice to have a few cold days. This cold air will settle into night, and temperatures will get down near 20 degrees in some of the areas. And then they should start bouncing back the rest of the week. And by Monday and Tuesday, we'll see temperatures well into the 60s. We may even see a 70 showing up in central and southern parts of the state come Wednesday, Thursday. So a much nicer week and just nice things to talk about locally on the weather.
Yeah. Will we have the wind like we normally have in the month of March that dries things out?
No, actually, it's not going to be windy. The high pressure system to the west, that's bringing the cold air in, will settle over the region and drop the winds down and then extend eastward, but we don't have anything coming from the west to crank up the winds again. We'll get some winds probably later in the period, but we have a low pressure system developing over the southern Rockies, and though the models pose some sort of a threat to southern Illinois on this one, I think most of it will stay pretty much to the south, and we'll see it come across the lower Mississippi Valley in the southeastern states, producing a lot of rain down there, which a lot of places there can use. And also that keeps the pattern up here more in a calm zone well north of the system and well south of any systems going by farther north.
So everybody kind of gets what they want, a little rainfall to the south of us. I think the Great Plains are due for rain, and we get a beautiful weekend, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The one area, I'm not as optimistic on the Great Plains as the earlier models were. Looks like we may see some snow showers in southeastern Colorado tonight and tomorrow, and then that'll it shifts southward into North Texas and eastern New Mexico, and then redevelop from the Mississippi Valley eastward. And some of it is, most of it, I think, is likely to skip over some of those dry parts of Kansas, Oklahoma, western Oklahoma, southwestern Nebraska. So those areas will get missed. Texas may get some relief. They could use the moisture. They're getting their corn crops starting to get planted down in there, and they can use all the moisture they can get.
You know, for a bit we were thinking, I think Mike Sola here called it dry to drenched, but apparently not out in that area. They still need quite a bit of rainfall because they've been awfully dry. Hopefully you'll be able to forecast that sometime in the future.
Well, yeah, we're in a drought period, and persistence always pays. You know, droughts, as we like to say, begin insidiously but end precipitously. And
well,
so you'll pardon me for that one.
All right. Well, thank you much, Pete, and we'll talk with you again next week, okay?
Okay, my pleasure.
Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Thanks for being with us on the CMR. I'm Todd Gleason.